aren't aware of it. Yeah.
I realize I don't understand. Need to separate the human body and say that there's some ethereal, spiritual thing inside there that's really caught us, and we're just a bunch of clay and meaningless nothing. And is that really necessary?
Because it's necessary.
Wait a minute.
Sure, it's necessary because there's no other way to picture an entire. What should I call it? An entire description of what life is. If we are capable of putting our finger physically on the source of one's life, then probably what should follow is, I don't know, let's say it's the appendix. Then let's just reinstall an appendix and we'll live forever when this appendix, you know, becomes weak, worn out. But we haven't been. They haven't been capable in all of these years of coming up with a definition other than a duality of guf and neshama. Our substance is the guf. Our neshama is the form of life or the essence of life. We haven't been able to do it any other way. Now, if that's the case, I know what the properties of the guf are. Tell me what the properties of the neshama are. That they are two opposites? That they seemingly contradict one another and one tugs at the other? Well, this tension, this polar tension, happens to have within it the dynamics of progress. Because of the fact that you can be pulled down, the neshama comes and tries to overpower the goof and pull it up higher and higher. Yes?
Do you have to be a monk to get this more meaningless? Or can it be
It has to be recognized once and for all that Rav Kook has no, in my humble estimation, has no class system. The Kedusha is ubiquitous. It's Melokh HaLaaretz Kevodo. Every single human being has this ability, Jews having the ability more than anyone else. The same ability.
And I go to work every day, like subway, home, with my wife and my neighbors, and got them the way I got them.
You have to.
Stuff.
Yeah.
And it seems like to get this orb meanness, I got to go up on a mountainside and not the way I got them in young Israel, and I got to change my whole lifestyle. How do I have this orb meanness in my everyday common lifestyle?
Okay, so the fact of the matter is that it was this yearning that led Rav David HaKohen, the Nazir, to Rav Kook. When they were in Switzerland, he woke up in the middle of the night and he heard the strains of davening. I don't know what he was saying, whether he was saying Tehillim or he was saying Tikkun Chatzos. I can't tell you, it's not recorded. When he heard this voice of a neshama in Rav Kook, that's when he realized that this man is for me. Why? Because this Rav Kook was capable of training in this world with a wife, with children, with jobs, with travel, to be able to hear that Chochmah HaPnimis at all times. Not too much.
So I don't understand. How do you get the Lord Nimitz in your everyday?
Now, the diet has to be a threefold diet. Number one, you have to define what the basic nutrients are. Or is one of the basic nutrients. It's one of the building blocks. It cannot be done unless there is chokhmah, pursuit of chokhmah. And there are some other building blocks. For instance, I would have to put in the vital nutrients in this diet I would have to put without question, according to him, an unbounded ahavas abrius. There's no one whom you can hate. Absolutely no one. Now, in your profession particularly, you know, you're in an adversarial relationship with someone every day, all day. And if you had no adversaries, you wouldn't have a panasa. You understand what I'm saying? He realized that, but somehow, can you understand that in your fight for justice, so-called justice, your desire is to be mative, is to bring tov to one of your clients? If that's the case, you turn your adversarial relationship into a trip of ahava. If you know that when you leave here and you go to the office, that some human being is going to have a better circumstance as a result of your efforts today than he had or she had yesterday. So this is within the realm, on a very elementary level, within the realm of ahava. He had adversaries also, Rav Kook, and they used to drive him up a wall. Okay? And there were times when he lost his cool. But somehow he was capable of realizing that within this system of adversaries, he defined and refined his position of a generalized ahava, that there is no such thing as being able to hate another human being. There's just no way. Now, you are asking me for big league stuff. Would you ask without training and without a lifelong commitment to pitch for the Cardinals in a World Series? Shalom Aleichem, ich bin da. Ich heiße Rav Kar. I've come to pitch the seventh game. I'm your Mashiach. You just let me go. Would you? So we come to the second element. After we define the basic nutrients, we have to go ahead and we have to realize that it is a lifelong pursuit and you need a coach. Without question.
That's not my question. My question is, we have to walk on a mountain.
No.
Have to go to Yerushitz or Ale.
It would help.
Do I have to change professions?
Why? Unless you reach a point, a crisis in your life that says, it doesn't have to be a midlife crisis, but a professional crisis that says,
well, it seems like everything
that what I'm doing is sheker.
Yeah, but I'm fine. So it's not sheker, I have all that stuff, but I'm not getting the ore of Nemus. I got to be up on a mountainside to get the ore.
Love Dafka. Love Dafka. I'm telling you again, it needs training. You need a coach. The coach will evaluate your style of life, will follow you and look to see what you do and how you do it, and then give you pointers. The way you wake up in the morning, I need 5 minutes earlier, so that I'm giving you an absurd example. I need 5 minutes from you. In those 5 minutes, I don't want you to go running, but I want you to go outside in your backyard and sit down and just look and say to yourself, Mo Rabu Ma'asecha Hashem, how incredible it is that I'm once again alive, the sun is shining, and the birds are fluttering above, and the squirrels are running, and life is once again thriving. It was in your backyard, Rob.
But still, I'm in my backyard, I'm withdrawing.
You are withdrawing? I would rather call it the wind-up for the day. You know, you are stepping back for a moment to be able to propel you for the rest of the day to realize that we're sitting there right in your backyard is a macrocosm of creation that you should get down and kiss every single day. And that's not withdrawing.
A monk withdraws lishma because there's no other way that he can exist. Here there is no sense of withdrawal, so that, let's say, when the Baal Shem Tov also went off into the forest and he, so to speak, withdrew, it was only to be able to gain that spiritual concentration, that chokhmah pnimis from creation, from bria, to be able to go back among the people. When Eliyahu HaNavi withdrew, when he realized that he was the only one who was frum, the rest of all of the Bnei Yisrael were a bunch of shkatzim. So he ran to Har Sinai, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu appeared to him in a nevuah. And the first nevuah was in a fiery storm. And Eliyahu HaNavi didn't understand it. Finally, Eliyahu HaNavi realized that HaKadosh Baruch Hu appeared to him in a kol demama daka, in intense silence. And then Eliyahu HaNavi felt that he had nevuah. Whereupon HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, Malachopo, what are you doing here? He says, what are you talking about? What am I doing here? I had to run away from them. A bunch of shkotzim, a bunch of thieves, a bunch of robbers, a bunch of crooks. There isn't an honest one among them. I'm the only one here fighting your battle. HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, yeah? Yashikach. Pick yourself up and get back over there and do the fight. If it is so, and I'm telling you, Eliyahu HaNavi, it's so, you hear my voice, get yourself out of here from this mountain, stop being a monk, and you get down among those Ganovim, Yankel and Shmerel and Berel and Moshe and Breine and Sprinzer, who all claim to be Frum, and you make sure that they see the light. And Eliyahu HaNavi picks up and he goes. No. You go to Eretz Yisrael on sabbatical to be able to charge the generators to come back. And that was the point. When I asked the Shiloh already, when I spoke to Rav Yoshiv, you see, Sukkot, I observed 2 days without any problem because I knew that I was coming back. Pesach, I already started to have doubts because I was asking my landlady if she would sell me the apartment. You already own territory, you own space in Eretz Yisrael, real estate, then you may have a different deal. By Shavuos, I was totally confused. So I went and I asked a Shiloh of Rav Eliyashiv. Rav Eliyashiv is one of the Chavri Bezdin of Yerushalayim, one of the tzaddikim in the poskim of today. And Rav Eliyashiv told me, at that point, having heard me, he told me, 2 days, because you're going back. Now, what he said to me, because you're going back, could be interpreted in various ways. I hear from you that you're going back. Although it can also mean, what I hear from you, you must go back, for whatever reason. That's the case, 2 days. On the second day of Shavuos, my house almost got blown to bits. I was blown to bits. The whole world, there's no Chol HaMoed in Shavuos. The whole world was going about their regular day's activity. We were sequestered in our house after a minyan in the morning, a Chutz La'aretz minyan in the morning. We were sequestered in our house for the rest of the day, and we just watched the people go by. Whereupon about 2 o'clock, when things were very boring and hot, we hear yelling and screaming, and we hear the police and we hear the army. There's a bus right in front of our house, and there was indeed a bomb there that they took four blocks down the mountain, and when they detonated it over there from 4 blocks away, we felt the tremors. Had it gone off in the bus right in front of our house, we would have been blown to smithereens, probably. And that was it. Now, I won't comment on what that bomb did to us, whether that was the message that we should stay or go. But nonetheless, I had, at that time, you're right, I had to ask a Shiloh. You got to come back. And you've got to keep pitching over here. And this first Oros HaKodesh was instrumental in being able to formulate my feelings. Because on the other hand, before Shavuos, on Yom HaAtzmaut of that year, when I went down to the Kotel to celebrate Yom HaAtzmaut, I broke out in a fever, a very high fever of 104, which landed me in bed for 9 weeks. And the part that was affected was the foot, you see. So maybe on Yom HaAtzmaut, the same Ribbono Shel Olam was blowing me up on Shavuos, was telling me that you don't go anywhere. Or you can learn just the other way around. If you already celebrate Yom HaAtzmaut, I'll show you. I'll show you. 9.5 weeks I was in bed. So who knows? Who knows? Well, one thing is for sure. The things that you grapple with, Rob, I grapple with also. Get up, and I teach, and sometimes I wonder if it wouldn't be better and more advantageous to this world if I went out and raked the leaves. And I talk, and I try to inspire. And it's like sometimes deaf ears. For weeks, months, years, and it just doesn't help. And then all of a sudden there's one ray of light. One ray of light in 10 years. One. Okay? One, just, you know, one hope. The famous story that I always, probably every night, subconsciously say to myself. It was 24 years ago in Savannah, Georgia, where I nearly killed a human being. I was there on a so-called NCSY convention, 181 kids. And there was one kid I was ready to kill. I said, stand. He said, sit. I said, go. He says, don't go. I says, sing. He says, keep quiet. And they were all following him. Shabbos morning, if I had to have this kid on my hands, I would have lost the entire convention, and I told him clearly, I will put you on a bus tomorrow morning on Shabbos. I will drive you there, send you home, and if you have any doubts, please test me. Don't show up until Sunday when your group is ready to go. He lived in Birmingham, Alabama. He left. He never again was seen by me. And I'll make it quite clear and short. But 6 years later, I met him in Camp Morris, learning in the mountains of Chaim Berlin Yeshiva. It sits us out, and he walks up to me on Shivasa B'Tammuz and says, do you know my name? And I said, I don't know your name. Please tell me who you are. He says, no, not yet. Do you know where you last saw me? This is, as we are sitting here, this is exactly the way it happened. No, I don't know who you are. I don't know when I last saw you. Any event, we played the game for another 4 or 5 rounds, and he said to me, I am so-and-so, whose name shall not be mentioned. Today he happens to be a very prominent Rosh Hashiva. Okay? Here I see that I'm losing the whole 181 kids. What did I come here for? And the payoff was that when I got home, my apartment was robbed because Leah went to her mother and father for Shabbos, and my apartment was robbed as a newlywed. Everything, all of our gifts and all of our silver were gone. Everything gone. And I said to myself, what was the whole thing for? I got up in the morning, I took a plane to Savannah. There was no reason in the world why I should have been put through this purgatory. I don't know what I accomplished other than trying to tell this kid that I would kill him. And I would be Mechal Shabbos from what? And I came home, and I find my apartment is cleaned out. Nothing, it was a total zero. There was absolutely total zero. And then you stop and you think and you think and you don't have answers and you wonder and you go on day after day, day after day. And I didn't have insurance, by the way. I didn't have enough money to get insurance at that time. Just newlyweds. And then 6, 7 years later, this thing confronts you. Right? And today's a Rosh Hashiva. That one instant where the light shines through the dark, dismal clouds, that's not withdrawal. Okay? You don't need withdrawal for that. I need you in your backyard so that you be able to wind up to be able to throw the pitch. Elsewhere, elsewhere. Okay, you're good. Over here he can't do it, huh? No, at that time he was stuck. He was stuck in Chutz La'aretz. No, he left Yafo. He was chief rabbi of Yafo. and he left because of the World War situations where he wanted to get some financial aid for the community in Eretz Yisrael, and he was stuck because the war broke out. So he remained in England. He was in England and Ireland, and once in Europe. He was there for close to 5 years. So he traveled around, and then he went back and became a Rav HaRashi of Yerushalayim. Then they appointed him, but he did not leave Eretz Yisrael because he wanted to. He left because he couldn't. He had to leave on a mission and couldn't get back.
He stayed still from during the war.
I would have to check the dates, but my estimation, it was wartime. It definitely was wartime.
I understand what you're saying, but it's not a foot sign.
I believe
here,
so.
Here,
yeah.
What you're saying.
I believe so. And yeah, you want to try to approach it from 105, line 105? Matchila davar, if you can't understand me, says Rav Kook, this issue of being able to see the inner light, or being able to captivate the inner light that's in us and focus it, matchila davar gadol hazeh b'tipin tipin. It starts very small, little drops. Avol kshehulchim va'olim, shehagivura elokis berum kidushas tahara. But suddenly when these drops add up, one moment, one second, one thought, one idea, holchim va'olim, they go and elevate themselves, kishehagivura elokis, so that this feeling of strength, godly strength, elevates itself and stands berum at the pinnacle of kidushas tahara, at its height of purity, miskaberes al yedei hachefetz hatov shel ha'adam. It goes ahead and miskaberes gets stronger and stronger al yedei hachefetz hatov shel ha'adam, the desire of a human being to strengthen it, whether it is a yochid or shel tzibur. Alright? Harei hi poretzet et hakirot hasotmot, and then suddenly it bursts forth against the walls that block the dissemination of this light. Hatipin matchilim liyot zochalim u'mekalkim, and then from little drops it starts to stream like a shower. Hakiluach, and these streams, the shower streams, holechu mitkaber v'nase zerem, then it becomes a flow like the bathtub. Okay, v'hazerem v'afik nechalim, and then it becomes like a river. Amon mayim rabim, kol hamulak kol machanek kol shakai. Bidvaro. It's there. It just has to start. I need 5 minutes from you. And then it drops and drops and drops. And this is his poetic way that says you don't do it in seclusion. You do it in the reality of life. What's more, Rav, it has to be among Jews. This process is impossible unless you derive the strength of the group called Knesset Yisrael. Okay? Now, we will continue on this for quite a few sessions. If we get this, you have one of the basic nutrients of his philosophy. For instance, on page 8, Tikkun HaRuach V'HaChomer. Line 239. Et haruch miut, this spirituality that we are speaking about, ein mitaknim bidoreinu, it is impossible to fix or to get a position on it, bidoreinu, ki im bimilui hagashmius, unless all of you here, unless all of your gashmius needs are taken care of.
You mean in our days it's not possible, and other times it would be?
Yeah, that was the question that I asked myself. I have no way of resolving it. I personally have no way of resolving it. I have some friends who are experts in thought, who heard Shiurim straight from Rav Tzvi Yehuda on this. So when I went through it, I wrote them in recent weeks, just to ask them what the pshat was. But in the secondary sources, I don't have any source that I have found, at least,
to be able to answer my question. I don't have an answer for it.
What about those who learn to eliminate desires rather than fill them?
Next sentence. Hakochot hagashmiim shel talmidei chachomim. The physical desires and powers of talmidei chachomim. Sheniklat yafeh o hakodesh bilibom or bilavavom, where in their hearts and their emotions they know what this tahara, what this light is all about, is muchrachim lechazek. You have to go ahead and strengthen. You know why? Because when you have the kedusha of the or, what does it do to the strengths of the physical desires? It makes them kadosh. And his whole thesis is that there is nothing that isn't kadosh in this world. There's no such thing as chol. Everything is kadosh. Why? Because it was within the schema of creation. If it was the Bria, then it has Kedusha. Oh yes, there is a hierarchy and priorities in Kedusha, there's no question about it, but everything has Kedusha. Now the only thing I have to do is make sure that every one of my Gashmiya's desires are steered, are colored by the Kedusha of the Nefesh. You can't do that as a monk, Rob. It's got to be done in the marketplace. It's bedafke got to be done where all your taivas, where all your desires can be put to the test. It's no big deal if you go through life and say that you're not a ganav and you live in a hermitage. It's no big deal. You bedafke have to be in the marketplace and then be able to say, today, Rabbanu Shalom, I could have been $16,000 wealthier today. I didn't do it. Because neshama shenasata be tahorahi. No, I felt that it wasn't right.
Chumash substantiates that.
Well, he's not saying anything new yet.
Oh, I'm just saying if Rob needs a proof, it says kadoshim to you. A few paragraphs later, the ahavta t'reacha kamocha. You can't do that in solitude. I don't think.
Impossible. Right. 2:45. The kochos hachomer, the power that the physical world exercises over us, umachshavos uregashos chomrios, and all of our feelings about gashmius, about things in this world that we want, when put to this test of the neshama. Yitam Tzu will be strengthened by themselves, al yedei kol ha-machshirim, by all of the things that go ahead and refine them, shehein mitchaskim bahem liyos basis lakodesh. The chomer becomes the basis of kedusha. That the kedusha of the Jew is not in seclusion. That when a Jew walks through life, and others see him, the way he conducts himself, the way he talks, the way he worries about his property, the way he worries about others' property, the way he goes to work, the way he deals in business, when they see that, this becomes the basis of Kedusha. This is the canvas on which Kedusha has to be painted. Without that, you only have colors. You have no canvas. You have painted absolutely nothing in seclusion. Does he say it forceful enough for you here at this point? You want another three times? Let's do it next time. Okay.
Do
we have them available? We have to have them. There have got to be, yes, without question.
That's a logical statement. You're saying it has to be. Does that mean, did you think...
Can you have coaches from manuals that have been written?
It's different. That's not a coach.
No. Let me tell you. Let me tell you where the coaching process can start. Let me go back to the times of the Ari. The times of the Ari, this was after the Holocaust of 1492, Spanish expulsion. And then in the 1500s, Tzfat was developed as a center, a new center of Jewish life, to be able to regenerate all of Jewish life in Eretz Yisrael. And the Ari and all those who were around him, Rabbi Yosef Karo, Rabbi Moshe Kodavera, Rabbi Shlomo Alkabetz, who wrote the Lechadodi, all of these fellows
created a little Muncie, let's call. I didn't decide whether it's up the hill or down the hill. Okay. created an Ascension Street, let's say, a 13th Avenue, a 16th Avenue. But their specific intent was to be able to pair up. Each one was not a chavrusa, but was a coach to another. He was their program. Daily, they would sit down before they went to sleep, Maariv time, to discuss all their thoughts, all their feelings, and to have the coach be able to go ahead and say, you know, maybe you should have done it this way, maybe you should have gone another way. Erev Shabbos, they used to end their Seder Hayom very early, and they used to do it every single Erev Shabbos, to go over the entire week, a Chazorah Shir, of what they did the entire week, how they functioned as human beings the entire week. And they created an exemplary society that had its roots firmly fixed in L'taken Olam B'malchus Shakai, of a complete new world order based on coaching one another. They were the coaches. They were mamish the coaches. Now, I think that would be a start. It's the chavrusa concept that if we could each of us pair, if we could pair up one with another, and whether it's learning Musar or learning on the telephone or whatever, but to know that you have an intimate friendship with someone, so that friendship will be defined on the basis of help me in anything and everything that I can do, or that I do wrong. Show me that I am wrong. Show me where I am wrong, so that I can sparkle best. That is a start. In my life, I have these coaches.
Too many.
What?
Too many.
No. I'm saying no. In my life, I have these coaches. Not too many. No, I do have. And I was zocher to be able to see, to be able to sit at the feet of at least two gedolim, but more. I must broaden that to not two, but one to five. Each one of these rebbes who gave me another dimension, and every single one of them saw in me a flaw, and they worked at it. I once came to one of my rebbes with a program of tzitkis. I was all of 19 years old. And he looked straight at me and said, Rab Chaim, this is an eingreiser bluff. It's one big phony shtick. And he was right. He was right. 12, 13 years later, I abandoned it because he was right. I had such five such coaches, not the least of which was Rav Moshe Feinstein, whom I was attracted to while learning with Rabbi Soloveitchik, whom I was attracted to only because I sat in front of him as a young fellow, asking him a shaila, where he contradicted himself and went to the polar extreme based on what he wrote in his third volume of Igros Moshe. When I came in, he invited me into his office to discuss it, so he had to get first an understanding of who I was. He wanted to know how long I was married, he wanted to know whom I married, what do I do during the summer, do I work, how do I support myself, do I go for vacation, if I'm busy Shabbos and Sunday, when do I have time for my wife, if we're all going to school and learning, all these crazy things. Here's the Godel, the Posek Ador, asking me these things when I simply have to know, does she need a get or doesn't she need a get? Yes or no? And you say, for your right, she doesn't need. And you're telling me on the phone that she does need. Tell me the longest. Explain to me why the change. He wants to know, and this is what he wants to know from me. Well, it was Adar time. It was Purim time, and I left. And I came where I was, and I left. And I came to learn by him for the next 5 years. He was such a coach, and I saw many such things from him that brought the aura in him to such brilliant radiance of being a human being that sees nothing more than Ahava and Kedusha. Doesn't matter who it is. Nothing more. So to the extent that when one Balabos, who was a primary supporter of his, didn't like a psak halacha that he gave, and it was given in writing, and the Balabos went ahead, who received the psak halacha, went ahead and tore it up, enclosed it in an envelope and sent it back. That was, in other words, that was the message he was giving Rav Moshe, I don't like the psak. He loved this Balabos so much, and was so mortally wounded as a result of it, that from that day on is when he started to age and wane. He's been on a downhill progression ever since that situation. Out of love, not out of hate. Not how could he have done this, okay? But I love him so dearly, how could he have done this? Doesn't he know, haven't I shown him that I love him, belay v'nefesh? How could he have done this? Maybe I didn't show him enough.
Can you relate that story about the construction workers where he sent out his...
That's Rav Kook.
Rav Kook, to come back to Rav Kook. Rosh Hashanah, I told an issue which we can't, you know, we can't begin to identify with unless we filter it through this concept of aura. They were building, it was 60 years ago, this past Rosh Hashanah. They were building a new area in Yerushalayim. And in those days, the chalutzim, if you were a chalutz, by definition, you had to cast off, you had to jettison anything that was frum. You didn't eat kosher, you didn't keep Shabbos, you bedavka looked to smoke more on Shabbos than any other day, just to show those fuddy-duddies over there in Meir Shearim what you are. You are the new breed, the new wave, the future. So they went, they were building a couple of buildings, and they were doing it. They did it on Rosh Hashanah. Did not stop Rosh Hashanah, continued to build. So the word got to Rav Kook, and he said to Rabbi Yechiel Michal Chalap, who was his second in command, that he should go with someone else, a shamus, and he should take a shofar. When he arrives at the building site, that they should tell the builders that Rav Kook sent us specifically, knowing that your schedule is the way it is, Rav Kook sent us that you should be able to hear shofars. Instead of, in case you couldn't get back, that he asked us to come to blow shofar. Would you be so kind as to stop just for a few moments and come over here and you answer brachas, and then we'll blow the 30 kolos. It won't take more than a moment or two. They were numbstruck and everything stopped. So Rabbi Yechiel Michal Chalap relates that by the time they were into, how long does it take to blow 30 kolos? I mean, you're not talking about even 10 minutes. Within those few moments, a segment just completely disappeared in the forest. He got lost. Another moment or two, a second or two, some started to cry when they heard Kiyah Shofar. And finally, by the time they were finished, a hefty segment of them begged that they not move until the workers, run quick into the work shed to change their clothes, get out of their work clothes, or just wash their hands and face. They want to come together with them, that they should lead them into the Beis Medrash where Rav Kook is. And that's the way the building was stopped. Now, so Rosh Hashanah asked a very simple question. That's exactly B'doreinu, what we would do, right? Exactly. There's no question that's what we do. First we'll take all the bricks and we'll throw it and kill them. And then, whatever's left, we'll carry them into the Beis Medrash for a Levaya, and they'll hear shofar. There's no question about it. How antithetical this is. Now, believe me when I say that when in Kikar HaShabbat, that's the famous square where all these demonstrations exist, when they yell and scream, Shabbos, 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 it is with such painful love, the same way that Rav Kook had. There's no two ways about it. The bigger the demonstration, the more love and the more protective love they have for Eretz Yisrael, for Shabbos, for the Kedusha, for Jews wanting to be Jews. Elamah, it's a matter of style. And we need coaches. His style was different. His style was different. Ashrei shezochisi lechach. I'm not, I don't need terribly romantic kinds of philosophies to live my life. But I told you this story. Ma'asa Shehoya, this is what I had. I had it, 24 years ago, this Rosh Hashiva situation. How can I, as a human being, help not understanding this methodology, the kind of methodology that he has? Oh, yes, there's pain. There are going to be tremendous forces connected. However, it is so difficult to be able to understand this precision, this laser beam surgery that he does on the neshama of every single Jew, that that's why most people don't go along with it. It is so much easier to follow the ways that I learned in the yeshivas that I learned. It is so much easier to follow the ways of Chassidus in certain respects, whether it's on Lee Avenue or elsewhere. It's so much easier. It's expedient. You know where you stand. The hell with everyone else. You either come my way or forget it. You're with me? Okay. You're against me? And he comes with this concept of such generalized ahava, that there is kedusha in every single one of us, even in me. Even in me. And I just have to clear away the insulation, and it's going to just burst forth. And when it bursts forth, it has to shine like a radiant, luminescent light on everything and anything that you're around. But it's got to be done with Knesset Yisrael. And that's where we will pick up in Yitz Hashem next time, when we take a look, okay, on page 2, HaShefa HaRazi B'Knesset Yisrael. The abundance of this secret of light can only be within Knesset Yisrael. Can't be done. You want to seclude yourself, it's because you want to run away. You want to run away, go ahead. You know, I'll give you $10 in case you want to come back. But this kedusha you're not going to really find. You cannot do it. Sure, you have to insulate yourself or seclude yourself from all of the tumult of the world. This is what Rav Aaron Zatzal did when he ran to Lakewood. He bedafke didn't want to come into New York, the hustle and the bustle of the marketplace of New York, even though there was so much kedusha in New York. He wanted to go away. He wanted the Talmidim to be out there. But he never, never secluded himself monastery style, going up on a mountain and staying there. He came down, Leich Rei, Kishi Chei Samcho, because the people need you. And you got to straighten them out.
You would not say really living here in the monastery. They're not up on the mountain. But living in the yeshiva belt, quote unquote, isn't that living monastery?
No, no. It is a comfortable style. Change is very traumatic. Okay? The opposite is very comfortable. When I'm able to put myself into a sense of balance that says I know what's going to happen every single day, and I have all of my priorities listed, this is the way, this is the yeshiva shaveg, this is the way. It's very comfortable, and we'd like to become complacent and comfortable. We are not adventurers. We're not. If Chas V'Shalom there were a Holocaust here, you think we'd be equipped to pick up and go? Well, how many of us would stay here? Okay?
Well, that's what I'm saying. We're really living.
But it's not. No. It's there's something in between. There's something in between. You would say monastery because in a monastery, if they would not accept, if there was no entree into that world, then you live in a monastery. You know, especially here, especially down the block, anyone who wants to come into that world may come into that world. You don't have to be a registered Talmud.
No, that's not true.
You may come into that world. You disagree with me?
No,
and we'll have to, when we shut off the tape recorders, we'll have to discuss.